Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Warm welcome and thank you so much for joining us for this, our last Motorsport Magazine podcast of 2012. And of course, we're going to review an absolutely wonderful Formula One season. Arguably the best ever, but Mr. Roebuck will tell us whether it was or not. And so will Jody Scheckter, the 1979 world champion. He's sitting right alongside me for the next hour. So they're going to have a lot of fun and some very interesting views, I would think. Just before we start, let me tell you about a new Motorsport Magazine subscription where you will receive 15 editions for the price of 12 or 30 editions for the price of 24. The latter sounds the better deal, doesn't it? There is a special offer too for our podcast listeners. That's you. It'll save you over 25% when you go for the latter offer. Are you with me? I'll just repeat it very quickly. You get 15 editions for the price of 12 or 30 for the price of 24. And if you're a podcast listener, it'll save you over 25% when you go for the 30 issues for 24. Good. Well, you can see all that on the Motorsport Magazine website at motorsportmagazine.com. Okay. Jody, welcome, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Second time round for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Now, what a season, wasn't it? What a season. And a Ferrari world champion, as you were. Were you rooting for Fernando?
That's a difficult one. No, not for Fernando, no. I think what he did when he was at McLaren's has just put me off him for life, I suppose. You know, put it that way. Yeah. No, I think he drove well this year, there's no question about that, and he's doing a good job in that. But, you know, when somebody does something like that, you lose respect for him. So
fair enough, Jody. Did the right man win, Nigel Roebuck?
No, this is where I'm going to disagree with Jody right off, because no, I think the outstanding driver of the year was Alonso, and it was interesting when I was in when I was in Texas talking to people in the paddock. I would say 90% of the people I spoke to were of the same opinion, simply because he's had certainly not the best car. He's been on the edge the whole time because he's been trying to compensate for the car's shortcomings, and he's made so few mistakes. You know, if you think about most other people have clattered into somebody at some point during the year, and I can't remember a time when that happened. So I just greatly admired the fact that he never gave up, in spite of in the last few races patently having a slower car.
I don't think my opinion's any different to yours. I said he did a good job, but that doesn't mean that I respect him for what he did before. I think he did drive well, and whether he deserved the championship or not is an opinion.
We're going to have to move quite quickly because we've got a whole year to get through, and we're going to go round this Motorsport Magazine table getting everybody's views. So Ed Foster, the right man win?
I think he did. The thing with Alonso is that, okay, he didn't have the fastest car throughout the year, but his car did have an amazing reliability. And you think of the races that Vettel didn't finish because of reliability problems. And it's very easy to say that Alonso was driving better when actually, you know, he was always in the points, of course, and that's down to him putting the car where it shouldn't be. But you've got to hand it to Vettel that he had a lot of points taken away, and certainly the win springs to mind. And I think he did. The right man won.
Damian Smith.
Yeah, I don't really talk about things in terms of who deserves what. You race with what you've got. Vettel, in the second half of the season, definitely had the best car, and he made the most of it, and he scored the most points. And that run of four victories really was the key to it for him. And you can't say he didn't deserve it. He did a great job. I think everyone would feel that in terms of pure performance, what Alonso managed this year was the equivalent to what we saw with Prost in 86, that kind of thing where you know you're up against it every race. He was driving for points, just driving for the best positions. His starts were amazing. His racecraft was superb. He made mistakes. I mean, he made a mistake in Japan. But overall, he was consistently the best driver. There's no doubt about that. But the fact is, he was up against Vettel and the other key thing, Adrian Newey.
Yeah, I think when you get to the stage, you know, when you have a car, when your race engineer is begging you in the late stages of a race not to set fastest lap for the sake of it.
Certainly a good car.
It tells you something about the car.
That'd be really nice, wouldn't it? I heard that all the time, but I couldn't hear them.
Did the right man win?
Did the right man? I think he got the most points anyone from that point of view. Can I bring something else up? The thing that I think is the most unfair about the Grand Prix at the moment is when they get these penalties for a gearbox that had to be changed and they had to go back. And I just think that's dreadful. I know there's an opinion that they say, well, you can't separate the driver and the car and stuff like this. But I think on the track, if the driver makes a mistake and crashes, that's the car and the driver. But when there's a gearbox, rather take it off the constructor's points and leave it the driver's. I think that, for me, because it really spoils some races completely from a viewing point of view.
It's a mad rule.
No, I agree. And in fact, the only guy who gets penalised is the one guy who's, you know, it's absolutely not his responsibility. So, yeah, I agree entirely.
Vettel's is only the third person ever to win three titles in a row. Is he just going to get better and better, Jody?
Well, I mean, he's solid. For me, he's very, very solid, and he's obviously very good. And he's got to get another four to beat Michael. I'm sure that's what he wants to do. Not so easy, because sometimes it looks easy, and sometimes you're in the middle of the grid driving as hard as you ever could and as well as you can, and it doesn't make a difference. But he's had the car. He's the whole package, that's for sure.
Winning one is tough, isn't it?
Yeah, winning one is tough. Well, I could have won three if I had the right tyres and the right engine and the right everything else. You know what it's like. No, absolutely. It took me, how many years to eventually do it, yeah.
Okay.
On the other hand, I don't remember you ever having, quote, a superior car to anything else.
I probably made it that way with my sorting it out. Yeah, I mean, it was always tough for me, I suppose. Yeah, and I had Jill as a teammate who was very fast. So, if I had had all those wins, if I could have done that, but maybe that's my fault. And maybe if I was better, I could have won all the races and beaten Jill. You know, don't know.
Let's move on to Lewis Hamilton. Well, he would have been fighting for the championship if it weren't for those retirements while leading. Nigel, what happened to Lewis this year, in your view?
Well, I mean, Lewis this year was back to, you know, the Lewis I remember. I until this year, I had always thought his first year was still his best. I thought he just drove beautifully that first year, and no complications, not being paid much money, still living in England, uncomplicated life. And then he, in various ways, seemed to me to lose it, and particularly last year, he in a big way lost it. But this year, he appears to have been settled again, you know, from a sort of personal point of view. And particularly, you know, the sort of the last half of the year, I thought he drove absolutely brilliantly and consistently brilliantly. And, you know, look at Singapore, for instance. You know, if the McLaren had, you know, had lasted that day, he was walking the race. And had he lasted, you know, Vettel wouldn't be world champion.
Can I ask a question? If you had a Formula One team, which two drivers would you put in?
Difficult, Jody.
I'll have to
Jesus. He really needs thinking about.
I'll have to hurry you.
I mean, well, the problem with it is, it's back on this thing, this old thing of Frankel was saying, you know, you can't put two bulls in one field. I mean, do you subscribe to that or not?
Well, McLaren seemed to do that, and
yeah, but it's difficult. Frank for sure. Always points to, well, he points to Senna and Prost, but he also points to, you know, Jones and Regazzoni was a great Williams team. Jones and Reutemann was a different thing. So I don't know. I mean, I probably be fascinating actually now to go back to the McLaren team of 2007. Because the funny thing about Alonso and Hamilton is they now actually finish up, I wouldn't say sort of great mates, but they do get on pretty well. And the interesting thing about them is that they both rate each other as their, you know, their major rival.
So what was the answer to the question?
I'm still thinking about it.
Right, okay. Let's move on. Ed Foster, I mean, Lewis Hamilton, never a dull moment.
No, he's great to watch. He's always been good to watch. But as Nigel said, this season he's just been so much better. And it was interesting listening to Martin Whitmarsh after the last race of the season. And he said, you know, we've had a fast car for a large part of the season, but we haven't been able to be up there fighting for the world championship. And, you know, they definitely would have been if Lewis was finishing the races that he missed out on. But for me, he's one of the drivers of the season.
Yeah, I mean, Lewis, as Nigel says, really, I mean, I think it's his best year of driving since 2007, probably his best year of driving full stop. And actually, I think that Lewis and Jensen as a pairing, because they complement each other so well, and the maturity that Jensen's got is probably the best workable pairing in Formula One. And actually, I think it's a significant failure for McLaren that they haven't won a world title this year. I'd say, and for some time. I mean, I know, you know, the competition is really strong, and that's great. You know, the new Horner Vettel axis is
don't forget Marco.
Marco, yes, it's a formidable team. There's no doubt about it. But as a package, I think McLaren really, you know, had it all this year, and I have to say, I think the reliability for them, they've got a long winter ahead of them. I think to look at where they lost it this year, and now it's all changed for them for next year. So big disappointment, I think.
Jody, Lewis Hamilton, a fan or not?
Yeah, very much so, and I agree with Nigel. I mean, when he came his first year and a half, 2 years. He was brilliant. I mean, nobody comes in and has that performance with so little things going wrong. It was incredible. And last year, I agree too, he was not even making mistakes by being over-aggressive. He was just making mistakes which just were completely stupid. And that was, he had gone from one, because I rate him as the best driver in heavy traffic. I used to rate Jensen as one of the worst, but he's become quite good in traffic now. But Lewis has been, for me, always in the first years, fantastic. He did some maneuvers in traffic that were just, and got away with it most of the time, except for last year. He was just doing the wrong thing. Yeah, no, I'm definitely a fan of his.
So you've got a Formula One team. Who are your two drivers?
Well, I always put Vettel and Lewis together as the top two.
Yeah, me too.
And I probably have to put Alonso into that. But I would probably pick those two drivers here, put two bulls in at one time and try and make them work together in a mature way.
Right. Well, we're moving up a gear on the last podcast of the year, because we're consuming some Schecter's organic energy. Yeah, this is not a commercial break. We are. And this is produced by his son, actually. And I haven't opened mine yet because I was afraid of making a noise on the microphone. But other energy drinks are available, we should say. But anyway, we're having a bit of Schecter's Organic.
It's good, this one, though. I'm not just saying this, honestly. It is actually, it tastes very good, actually. So
now, we move on to the return of Kimi Räikkönen. And I declare interest here because I love Kimi Räikkönen. I think he's good fun, and I was really, really pleased to see him come back. Nigel, did he look good because of Grosjean being unreliable, shall we say, or is he as good as he was, do you think?
Well, first of all, I don't think it was anything to do with, you know, Grosjean's eccentricities. I thought he drove beautifully. I think I just kind of suspect maybe that last little bit of edge is quite maybe not there, but fundamentally he did drive beautifully. He made mistakes actually in qualifying, which compromised some of his races. And you know, Kimi will always be Kimi. I mean, last Thursday in San Paolo, every driver was in the place apart from Kimi Räikkönen, who was in Los Angeles with his mates.
Oh, good. I'm pleased to hear that.
And, no, but it's that's the way he is. I remember, you know, Martin Whitmarsh telling me about just exactly the same thing, you know, going from Montreal, not straight to Indianapolis the weekend after, but going via Las Vegas for 3 days, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds eminently sensible.
It probably is right, but as Martin said, you know, and I said to him, if you lose pole by 5/1000th of a second, won't you kick yourself? And he said, and he obviously agreed with me, and then he went and got his plane to Vegas.
Yes.
So
right.
That's Kimi.
I used to think that of James, you know, if he didn't do all the funny stuff he did, how good he would have been. Exactly.
Well, I declare a further interest. I was a big fan of James. Ed.
I think Kimi's been brilliant this year. And it's his brain that he's got at the moment that seems to be so useful. There were a couple of overtakes which he didn't quite make that pass on Vettel, obviously, which he didn't quite make stick, and he didn't really go for it. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but then near the end of the season, he was making those passes and things like that. And you could probably jump on his back and say, well, he should have taken the lead in Bahrain. He should have made that pass. But, you know, you can't fault him.
That's really all I was saying earlier on, Ed, that I think possibly the old Kimi.
Yeah, but then he did finish third in the championship. And you know, to finish every single race bar two in the points, bar one, I think it was, and you know, that is an amazing run of form.
Yeah, I think the Lotus Renault team was the perfect place for him to make a comeback, I think, because if he'd gone back into Ferrari or McLaren, I think against any of those other world champions on the grid, you know, he would have been in the shade. But being a team leader, a very good, strong team, but not quite a championship winning team, was probably the best environment for him. And he got better, I thought, as the year went on.
I'm so glad he got his win.
And isn't Formula One better to have him than not, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, unless you're trying to interview him, yes.
Ah, no, but that's fine. I don't mind that either, actually.
But the stuff on the radio...
you're not trying to interview
him. Yes, I do try to interview him, but it doesn't worry me because that's who he is, that's how he is, and that's how he'll always be. In fact, we did ask him to comment on his season for this, but he didn't have a lot to say about it. Jody, Kimi Räikkönen, well, actually, what's interesting about Kimi, for you, from your point of view, to me, is the comeback itself. Did you ever consider such a thing?
No, I was lucky. I got involved in a company in America, which I started, and you know, I didn't go to Grand Prix for 10 years because I was so involved with that, trying to make that work. So I was lucky. I think lucky that I didn't. But he did a lot better than I thought he would have done. And I thought he drove, you know, really well. In fact, when he won the championship, he got into that, you're thinking he's very, very fast. And then the year after, he wasn't very good at all. In fact, I think he did better this year than that year. So no, he did a good job this year.
It's interesting too, from a comeback point of view, that his was a lot better than Schumacher's.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that's hard to understand. But I mean,
I suppose the only thing I'd say is A, that he's a lot younger than Michael. B, he was only away for a couple of seasons rather than three. And C, while he was away, he was he was rallying and he was doing competitive. He was driving competitively.
He certainly doesn't have the fitness of Schumacher. I do know.
No. I think that's probably right. That's probably the case.
Okay.
But I think he drove better this year, certainly, than I would say probably the last 2 years he did with Ferrari, when he just seemed to me to lose interest at that point.
Ed Foster, who kindly prepares my script, which I try to stick to, has put Button, Webber and Massa together under the heading Best of the Rest.
Perhaps a bit harsh in hindsight, but...
anyway.
Well, no, I'll stick to it.
Okay. Well, anyway, should we have expected more, I suppose, is one question. Button is different because Hamilton is leaving, but will Webber and Massa just be the second drivers next year? I guess they will be, won't they? What do we think, Nigel? Let's start with Jenson Button.
I thought Jenson had a fairly typical Jenson season, quite honestly. You know, there are days when you don't know Jenson's in the race. But at the same time, it isn't a surprise occasionally when he just takes the lead and you know, and disappears. I've said before, I don't think it's a surprise that Jenson's hero was always Prost. Because I think in many ways he drives just like Prost. I don't think he's as good as Prost was, obviously, but like Joe Ramirez always said about Prost, you know, when the car was absolutely right, no one could beat Prost. If the car wasn't quite as good as it should be, then Senna was the guy you needed. So it didn't greatly surprise me, you know, when Jenson won in Australia the first race, because he can do that sometimes. And Spa, you know, he was fantastic at Spa. He had the upper hand on Lewis the whole way through.
And in Brazil, he stayed, you know, on the grey tarmac.
Yeah. But you know, equally, as I say, there will be days when his presence in a race isn't really very apparent.
What about Mark Webber? Seems to me in a terrible, horrible position to be in, teammate to Sebastian Vettel. But anyway,
yeah, it's true. Actually, I mean, I must confess, at the last race, I was thinking Mark's in a kind of invidious position because he's teammate to Vettel, but he's great mates with Alonso. So it was, you know, he was in an awkward position in terms of what he probably hoped for and what he was expected to work for. Again, you know, Mark, I mean, he was wonderful at Monaco, wasn't he? He was wonderful at Silverstone. But other races, you thought, where the hell is he? You know, he's a little bit of a mystery to me, Mark. He always has been, because you know what he's capable of when he's really on it. And I thought actually something is worth pointing out. In the early part of the year, when Red Bull weren't really, they were sort of thereabouts, but the, you know, having had the season they'd had in 11, it was a big come down. And interestingly enough, at that point of the season, you know, Mark was usually quicker than Sebastian.
He was. That's interesting. He was. You're right.
Yeah.
What about Felipe Massa? Delightful guy, can't help liking him.
No.
Again, you know, always be number two.
Well, you know, let's remember in 2000 he was world champion for 20 seconds, you know, 4 years ago. And you've got to say that he usually had the best of Raikkonen when they were teammates. And I suppose it's arguable that maybe he will never be the driver again that he was before his accident. But I thought it was interesting the way he picked it up this year, and particularly after Ferrari, after a long, long drawn out process, sort of said, "Yeah, okay, well, you can stay for one more year," sort of thing. And that really seemed to trigger something. And he started to drive like, you know, we know he can drive. But the early part of the year, I mean, frankly, he was pretty dreadful, wasn't he?
It was depressing, yeah.
I was delighted to see him come back because he is, as you say, such a nice guy. Yeah. And, you know, and everybody likes him.
I felt so sorry for him at Interlagos, where he didn't know whether to please the fans or please the team.
Well, I know, but, you know, in 07 he had to do exactly the same thing, didn't he? He dominated the race, but he had to hand it to Kimi at the very end so Kimi could take the championship. So it's a role he's kind of, you know...
Yeah.
it's unfortunate for him, but
have to be reasonably quick, yeah. I'm afraid.
As Nigel said, really, it's very sad to see him driving, you know, as he was at the beginning of the season. And there's obviously just something that he wasn't happy with the way the car was behaving. But some of the drives he did near the end, I mean, especially Brazil, you know, he is obviously a bit of a Brazilian specialist at that track, but there was an amazing drive that he did. And, you know, he had the measure of Alonso all afternoon, I thought.
I was interested, Jody, you were saying about Jensen that your perception of him has changed in terms of the way he deals with traffic. I mean, as a driver, his career progression, he's, you know, perceptions of him have changed dramatically, haven't they, over the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, and I feel the same. You know, I wasn't sure he was ready for Formula One. In fact, I think I said that at the time because of his how he interacted in the traffic. But he's got better and better and better at it, and in nearly a strong point of his now. Yeah. No, I think you summed it up, Nigel summed it up right. He's at the car's right. He's really, really good, and Lewis can take a bad car and drive fast with it, or drive around some problems.
If I was McLaren, I'd be worried about next year and those dips in performance that Button has. You know, with Perez coming along, so have Hamilton.
I was going to say, and dips of performance that Perez had. I mean, it's ever since he signed that contract, he hasn't driven a decent race.
He's barely finished a race. Jody, Mark Webber, always sort of nearly there, but never is, sort of thing. Well, I mean, no, that's not quite fair. He's won races, but it's not an easy place for him to be, I guess.
Well, driving with Vettel, you know, for anybody, you know, you're talking about the best. But, you know, he's had some races where he's really been fantastic and been faster. But can he keep it up at that level for the whole season? No. And you know, you're against the best in the world. You know, you're really, and he's a really nice guy.
he's
a really nice guy. He's really down to earth, straightforward guy.
Yeah. Yeah, which is refreshing these days. Felipe Massa, now you spent quite a long time at Ferrari, so you know what goes on at Ferrari. He's done a fantastic job for the team in the second part of the year, hasn't he?
Yeah, I was just thinking through as you guys were talking about it. I suppose I would have thought, and I'm going to be mean now, is that Alonso, when he was doing bad, Alonso wanted him to stay. Because why does he want some hot shoe coming in there? So that was probably part of the decision, but I'm being a bit mean probably. I wouldn't have hired him. I wouldn't have hired him for another year for what was his performance, but he did come back at the end of the year. Maybe now that he was signed up, he could show that he could beat Alonso. I don't know. I'm just mean. But he hasn't done a good job since his accident, really. Yeah.
Here's a question. What did we think about the Austin qualifying situation when Ferrari broke the seal on Massa's gearbox, giving him the penalty? It caused quite a bit of kerfuffle over the weekend. What were the opinions?
It's curious. It certainly did. No question about it. And I can see why it did. But I suppose if you going to be cynical about it, you say, well, this is 2012, sports changed, people will do anything. And what's interesting was that Ferrari in essence turned a rule on its head and made it work for them. You might think it's a silly rule in the first place, but that's what they did. And oddly enough, in Abu Dhabi, that's exactly what Red Bull did, and nobody got upset, because the rule is, you know, if you fiddle with a car after qualifying, that's it. You start from the pit lane.
Yeah.
I mean, so you turn it around. So, okay, we start from the pit lane, then we can fiddle with the car.
If you were a team manager, you'd do exactly what Stefano Domenicali did, wouldn't you?
Well, I don't think Montezemolo would have welcomed him back to Italy had he not done it.
No. It's the rules, the problem. It's not Ferrari.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Jody, what's your view of that particular incident?
Well, I'm not sure it's 2012. I think they've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
That type of thing for a long time. But you've got to take advantage of the rules. Exactly right. I didn't think he would have been very happy if he didn't do that.
You're not a fan of this rule, I know, though, are you?
No, for the opposite reason.
I agree entirely.
Yeah.
Okay. Hülkenberg and De Resta. We're moving through the grid, as you can tell. This is what we do in our review of the season. Hülkenberg has some fantastic races. De Resta, in my humble opinion, disappointing. Nigel?
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I wouldn't say De Resta disappointing overall. I mean, all you can say is that I think Hülkenberg got the better of him. And actually, I mean, I think I think I'm not just going on Sunday's race when Hülkenberg led. I think a lot of people have seen something special about Hülkenberg for a while now. And frankly, it amazes me that McLaren didn't take him rather than Perez. So now you've got to assume that he is kind of locked into Ferrari.
He's going
to Sauber, which uses Ferrari engines, next year. And I mean, it would amaze me, frankly, not to see him in a Ferrari in 2014.
I suppose he doesn't take Carlos Slim with him, does he? Therefore, that must probably be a factor.
Well, yeah, there is something in that. Carlos Slim, I know, has requested a tour of the McLaren factory, which I'm sure won't be turned down.
He hasn't bought it yet.
No, he hasn't bought it yet.
Ed.
But you can't blame them. These things have to be thought about. Look at the economic times we live in. Vodafone may not be around forever.
No, may well not be, as I hear. Ed.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting with these midfield teams. And, it's very easy to say, well, they had a middling car. It's very hard to prove yourself in a car like that. But then Hülkenberg in Brazil, Vettel at Toro Rosso, Alonso at Minardi. And that's what Hülkenberg has done this year. But De Resta, although he's, I think, performed very, very well throughout the year, he hasn't had any of those races when you sit up and think, wow, where did that come from? And I think that's what you need to do as a driver of midfield cars. So, give him his due. It's early days, and I think he's certainly a great Grand Prix driver, but I don't think we know how great, whereas with Hülkenberg we do.
I've always thought highly of Hülkenberg. I saw him in his junior career, and he seemed to have all the right ingredients at that stage. And I think the signs are there that he's a top performer. I'm not sure yet whether he's a top performer in the Vettel mold. He's got a long ways to go to prove he's at that sort of level. But I think De Resta probably had a bit of a second season syndrome this year. It was just he didn't have a bad year at all. But as I think Ed's spot on that when you're in that sort of situation, you've got to have those days where you show some high peaks and when things are going right for you, you make the most of it. And he didn't seem to have many days where he stood out from the midfield. Whereas Hülkenberg did, and Hülkenberg edged him on qualifying as well.
Hülkenberg has that spark, I feel, and it doesn't hurt either that he's immensely popular in the team, very well liked.
Jody, so you pretty him. Much set the world on fire when you came over from South Africa. Your rise to Formula One was meteoric, I think would be one word for it. What does it take for these guys towards the back of the grid to prove that they are something special in your opinion?
Well, just go back on that. I think what we forget about this last season, something else, is that the lesser teams were massively good compared to what they've ever been in the past. You normally had three teams and anybody else was just... Now you saw five or six teams that could be leading a race and won some of them. So that was... Those middle teams were massively competitive compared to before. What did it take? Well, for me, I drove in a spectacular way because I slid the car a lot and that, and I think that got me noticed. It probably was a disadvantage when the tires got more and more sophisticated. You've got to do what these young guys do and come and beat what you think you can, what they think the car can't do. I think that's it. That's important. That you're going to put the car in a place where it's not. You're going to show the character that you need to when you're down. You're still fighting. It's quite interesting. The guys we're talking about. There were three of them really that were up and coming drivers really. And I think I agree with what Nigel says. I'm saying that too often actually.
You are. I must say it's very disappointing
after all these years, Jerry. Yes. I don't know what's happened.
I must be getting old. Yeah, so I would probably have picked Hülkenberg if I was...
What about Perez going to McLaren, Jody? I mean, have they taken the right guy there based on what we've seen throughout this season?
Well, I suppose the beginning of the season you would have thought so, but you know, the end of the season you would say no. We'll have to see. It's all done, isn't it? They're not going to change their mind now. yeah. McLaren's are actually a very loyal team to their drivers, probably more than most. Yeah.
You really just don't know at this stage, do you, with someone like Perez? I mean, the peaks, Monza, he was superb at Monza. Then there was the Malaysian Grand Prix as well. But as Nigel said earlier on, you know, after Monza, you know...
I'll be surprised if he can compete with Jensen. Yeah. I think he'll be a... and I thought that of Jensen going to what, but I was wrong there too. So
I was. Yeah. So was I.
Yeah.
I'm getting older.
I got to say, driving up in the car this morning, I thought, right, we're going to have a good ding-dong between Scheckter and Roebuck, and it just hasn't happened. Actually, Joe Ramirez, who's spent quite a lot of time with Perez.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Says to me that he just needs to grow up and calm down, and if he can grow up and calm down, he'll be a great racing driver, but until he does that, he won't be.
Joe actually also, he said to me, because the, you know, the perception of Perez, and a lot of people have said it and felt it, is that he's arrogant. And it's all sort of mapped out for him, a little bit like, you know, we felt with Piquet Jr. Joe says, no, actually, when you really get to know him, he's I can see why he comes across as arrogant to you, but in fact, what he is actually quite timid.
Mm. He's very confident, and well, that can sometimes be...
But it's according to Joe, that's a sort of perhaps a mask, you know, okay. Front, yeah.
Penalties and punishments. Maldonado and Grosjean. Well, Nigel, blimey, we've seen this since the year dot, haven't we? The odd madman comes along and does something crazy, but this year certainly, in Grosjean's case, the number of mistakes he makes is a bit worrying, I would say. What are your thoughts on these two?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, the thing they have in common is they're both fundamentally blindingly quick. I don't think there's any doubt about that. First part of the year, you know, you look at Grosjean's qualifying times compared with Raikkonen's, and he was blowing Kimi away, you know, regularly. What worries me about Grosjean is the sort of accidents he's had. And particularly, I mean, if you analyse, if you play back the Spa start in slow motion, you know, when you look at what it led to, but you just have to conclude, what on earth, you know, what the hell was he doing? And it makes you worry from the point of view of, you know, is this peripheral vision quite what it should be?
Well, because you could say
he just veered across the road into Lewis as if, you know, as if he had the place to himself.
You could say it's the same about Interlagos, in fact, where even I realised that there was no way he was going to get through that past the HRT.
No.
So, yes. What Maldonado there? I mean,
Maldonado, I mean, Christ, you think sometimes Maldonado maybe should have his own personal steward, don't you? I mean, he does some very odd things. On the other hand, I think he's been blamed for things this year, on occasion unfairly. I thought the coming together with Perez at Silverstone, for instance, I mean, if ever there was just a plain simple, you know, motor racing accident, that was that. But the problem is, once you get a reputation, you know, it's very easy to blame you ever after.
Ron Dennis would say, of course, you know, that's why you don't want Latin drivers, because they...
What, you mean like Ayrton Senna?
Well, okay. Okay, I think he was an exception to just about every rule on the planet, but yeah.
Well, Ron used to say very proudly, oh, we know how to handle South American drivers at McLaren, and then Montoya arrived.
And Perez is coming, but Ron's not there anyway, so it's irrelevant.
No, that's true.
Okay,
that's true.
Ed Foster, Maldonado and Grosjean.
Yeah, I mean, as Nigel said, it's with Grosjean, you really do wonder what's going through his head at some races, because, you know, there's quite plainly a car there and he just turns into it. But I think there's also something to be said for, you know, you were saying that Maldonado's, you know, just always doing it, and he's like victim of the mistakes he's made, in terms of, you know, people start watching him more closely and it's been unfair on him. I think Grosjean's a bit like that, but in terms of, you know, everyone is on his back so much that he's now driving scared. You do get an element of every time he goes out, or he's got a start to do, or, you know, got to negotiate the first corner, and you just think, how's he going to handle this? I mean, there's so much pressure, and of course that's in the back of his head, you know, after his one race ban. And I think it's really hard to drive. I mean, Jody, you'll know better than me, it must be hard to drive, you know, with knowing that. Yeah.
Well, I was quite lucky, because I practice a lot with my peripheral vision. My first wife was very jealous, so I had to keep my head straight and look around a lot.
Why was she jealous, Jody? I wonder.
I can't think.
No, but actually, you are the man to talk about this, because after the shunt at Silverstone at the British Grand Prix, people say that, you know, that was a bit of a moment for you, because you realised actually that perhaps there was something you needed to do about your approach. I mean, is that true or is that bullshit?
No, I don't think it's true at all. I think, if anything, is when I went with Ken and he started pushing me to slow down, and did he do it too much? And maybe when I saw Sevett's accident, it came home to you as well. But no, at that stage, I didn't really care. I was just driving as fast as I could. And you know, the car twitched out on me, which was a new tyre, you know. It was funny. I didn't really think of the difference between driving for McLaren and then going to Ken, because at McLaren I had two experienced drivers, so I'm sure I was getting a lot of the stuff, setting up the cars and things like that, coming down and helping me, which you didn't really realize. And when I was with Ken, I was the one that was showing the way. So
I mean, but these two sort of, I suppose we could bracket them the wild men or something. Is this just something that they get through their, has to be worked through their system?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think, yes, you hope so. And I think, as you say, they're blindingly fast. And that's one of the most important things. You know, everything else can get sorted out. If you're not fast, then, yeah. So, let's hope they get through that, yeah.
I think there's some interesting parallels here that with Jody, people forget how because of that incident at Silverstone, they forget how good your start to your Formula One career was, and how competitive you'd been that early start that year. And the Silverstone thing kind of dominated the headlines for some time, and that's what people think about for 73. And with Grosjean, he was superb at the start of the year, and then he had these mistakes, and pretty big ones, but they are the things that people remember. And I think it's about character as well, that with Maldonado, you get the impression that all the barbs and criticism that have come his way kind of just bounce off him. He doesn't care, it doesn't bother him. Whereas with Grosjean, you know, he's looked shaken at times this year, and I don't think he's the same guy now that he was this time last year.
No, I agree with that.
Okay.
No, I agree. And that, you know, the ban, the one race ban, I mean, I think that really shook him. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I actually like Maldonado. Yeah. I think he's, you know, he is a bit of a wild man.
So do Williams.
On occasion, but, you know, but It's the old thing, you know. You can always tidy up speed. You can't speed up tidiness, as John Wire always said.
We must talk about Mercedes Benz before we come to towards the end of the season review, because it really is quite fascinating to me and many others that a team of this size and resources and experience has done as badly as it has. Nigel, do you agree with that?
Yeah. when you look at the technical personnel they have, and you know, inevitably some people have speculated, well, perhaps too many cooks. I'm not saying that's necessarily the case. But I'll admit it surprises me. Two things that surprised me are, one, that Mercedes have not progressed. I know they won a race, but they've not really progressed. And the other is that still, after all this time, those three teams, probably two in the future, at the back, have still not managed on one occasion to score a point, which that amazes me too. But just going back to Mercedes, I don't know what you say. I mean, the car was sort of, okay sometimes, lamentable others. It was very, very hard on its tyres. On the other hand, in Shanghai, Rosberg was, he not only won the race, but he was comfortably on. He was on the pole, I think, by half a second. And he just took off at the start and no one got near him. That one weekend in 20.
The fact that the Mercedes seems to have just dropped off in performance so much after that win, it seems to be, as Nigel said, it hasn't progressed, but I think it's worse now. It's gone done the opposite. Has Ross done a 2008 and said, forget this year, earlier than most teams?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. Yeah. And, next year, I know, there's always been the thing, as long as Michael was with any team, there's going to be a certain amount of focus on it. But next year with Lewis, it's going to be a different deal altogether. Because if Lewis isn't competitive, then, the problem is not with him.
Jody, I'm intrigued to hear what you thought about Michael this year and the comeback as a whole. What's your opinion?
Well, I think the comeback was his personal decision. And I think it, from his point of view, I think it was done. I mean, it must be horrible sitting on the pit wall trying to look busy, and that's what he is doing for a period of time. That's probably the worst thing you could do, and then it became a complete new challenge. But what I think did the most good is that you can imagine retiring, winning the world championship seven times. You are like God, you think there's nothing that's near. Now he's going to get out of this thinking, Yeah, and I think that's very good for a person. I think it gets you down to earth.
Yeah, and right. But I think when you were saying you retired and then you didn't go to a Grand Prix for 10 years because you started the company in America and it took up all your time, and I think fundamentally that's Michael's problem. I mean, he came to the races after he'd retired in some sort of vague capacity with Ferrari. And he will look, if ever anybody looked like a lost soul, it was him. And I, down the road, I really do wonder what he will find to do, because you just get the impression he actually doesn't really have much interest in anything.
Organic farming, maybe?
Well, that'd get rid of his fortune quite quickly. It's difficult. I always think of children, film stars, how they come and then they just drop off like that and they haven't got anything to do. You can think some, I'm not saying Michael, but they're earning millions of dollars or pounds and then all of a sudden their qualification is mechanic or something, and they got to get from that amount to the real world, and it's quite hard for some people to adapt to that. I always say I went from first class to standby in 1 year. And you're feeling lost in a team. I think when I announced my retirement halfway through, I already felt lost. I didn't feel like I was the same part of the team 2 weeks later.
It's interesting, actually, because it's not something any of us will experience. And Damon Hill was here earlier in the year, and he said, I think the first couple of weekends after, in his the year when he'd stopped driving, he used to take a chainsaw out into the woods and just thrash around with it because he felt so frustrated and at a loss. And what was he going to do? Where was he going? I'm right, aren't I?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we may be saying goodbye to many more people apart from Herr Schumacher, actually, because it may be goodbye to Bruno Senna, Kamui Kobayashi, and Heikki Kovalainen, and possibly even Petrov, maybe. Is that right? Anyway, there's quite a lot of change around at the back, towards the back of the grid. I think that an interesting way to look at this briefly might be who would any of us like to see come in? And I could just get the ball rolling by. I really want to see Bottas in the Williams. Nigel?
Yeah, and I think you will. I'll be interested to see how Gutierrez goes in the Sauber. Actually, down the road, I'm not talking about next year, or maybe even the year after, what the really intriguing guy on the horizon to me is Felix da Costa. Because I think, to come into the Renault 3.5 series half season and then just dominate. I remember I watched the last race on TV, and I mean it was amazing because he was there was a great scrap over second place, and Felix da Costa was 15, 20 seconds up the road.
You heard it here
and
first.
I'm sure he's got to be. He could be like Vettel in the sense of going to the Red Bull team. The main Red Bull team very quickly.
Felix da Costa.
Antonio Felix da Costa.
Da Costa. Ed Foster, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to be really sad to see Kobayashi go. I've been such a big fan of his. The fact that his fans have raised €650,000 to try and keep him in the sport is quite an amazing achievement, and it's pretty good reflection on how he's viewed. And I also think I'll be really sad to see Kovalainen go. I think he's driven better at Caterham than he ever did at McLaren, and I think he deserves a seat in the midfield, a seat somewhere else, and not even at the back of the grid, let alone out of the sport.
Yeah, I would agree. Except I would say he's actually not been. There have been occasions this year when Petros been quicker, and you think, well, looking at their reputations and records and all the rest of it, that shouldn't really have happened.
But Petros no mug, is he? That's
the thing. He isn't.
And that's the quality, actually, I think, through the grid is as strong now as it's ever been. I don't know what you think, Jody.
I think it's stronger than it's ever been. Yeah. The standard of driving right through the field is very, very good, yeah.
But there's a lot of drivers out there who, are going to be looking for world sports car drives and things next year by the looks of it. And it's amazing, really, that some of the quality that is being left on the sidelines. And, of course, the teams are having to look more and more at money.
That seems to me to be the big factor here. Is that it's become a lot more about money than it ever used to. And therefore, it's not just... He's got great talent, he's really quick, so we'll take him, is it? It's not like that, Jody, anymore.
I think it's always been like that for really? Many times. You get a driver that really shines out and he can go through that barrier, and then others have to come with some sort of sponsorship, somebody they know. But just going back to Kobayashi, I think that's the one I'd be sad not to see. I'm not sure about any of those other guys, but he's definitely shown. I mean, he was quicker in qualifying than Perez quite a lot of the time, which, is the speed thing again. And he's been very brave in a lot of, what's his name, and not crashing that much as far as I remember. No, I think he's definitely should have a place in Formula One.
I think we're in an era after most of the manufacturers have left Formula One. And when manufacturers are in the sport, they don't need pay drivers because there's budgets available. But now most of the teams are privately funded, so they're going to need money coming into the sport, and it's the way it goes.
Yeah, I think Jody is right. I mean, that is the way it's always been. I just think maybe it's probably more apparent now. It's more visible now.
And there's no big tobacco sponsor.
Because that's true. And also, look at the world's financial plight. I mean, they just. Money is just harder to find.
I drove the Top Gear live in South Africa. I drove the Mercedes, and the year before the Red Bull, which was the funnest thing I've done for a long, long time, because I drove my Ferrari as well there, which was okay. But the modern car and the technology they have with it is just absolutely mind-boggling and fantastic. I loved it.
Jody, did you other drivers I've spoken to from your sort of era who've driven modern cars say fundamentally they're very chary about saying it because they don't want to come across as sort of it was different in my day, but the consensus seems to be they are decidedly easier to drive now than they were, in the sense that you can't over rev, you can't miss a shift, you you've got power steering, etc., etc. What do you think?
The Red Bull, it actually worried me, because before that I didn't really want to drive a Formula One car, because I thought after three laps my neck would be so tired. But then I said, well, it'd be nice to have a go. But I felt so good in the car that I started to think, now, well, you're talking about money. I think, should I go for one of those qualifying sessions? But they do say that the older you are, the faster you were. But I felt absolutely fine in the Red Bull and pushed it. And, yeah, it seemed...
Where was it? Where did you drive it?
That was in Kailami.
Right.
And the other one was in a track in Durban, which was... And I spun the first lap, so...
But, yeah, Jody was saying to me the other day that... he quite fancies those Friday morning sessions where they get young drivers in. So
yeah, when you're talking about paying for a driver, I thought, should I have a go, you know?
No, wouldn't this be a fantastic plan? Is it on Friday mornings, we don't have young drivers anymore, we have the old drivers going back.
Yeah.
Now that would be something
I
else.
I could get a wig and come as a young driver.
We've had Damon and Prost driving the Red Bull this year, so get different generations come back.
Yeah, but I think this is a great strategy. Friday mornings is for the old guys. Let's see who can hack it. Okay, we've got very little time left actually, but we do have questions for Jody, and the first one comes from Andrew Frankel. I guess that's the Andrew Frankel, is it? Jody, what did you think of the Tyrrell P34? It's a good question.
Was that the 6 wheels?
Do you remember which one?
Yeah, that 6 wheels. What did I think of? Not a lot. Although, again, looking back, I did better than I thought I had done. The car used to break a lot. But also, I thought the theory behind the car was wrong. And I think that's when they started listening to Patrick a little bit more, because the frontal area wasn't any different, because the back was the same width, although they made it narrower, and then they ran a slightly different back wing, so when we did a back-to-back, it was faster. And then braking was supposed to be better, but once you turned into a corner, one of the little wheels jumped up and locked, so you had to back off your brakes. So it was probably a bit better straight in. It's funny, I was just thinking another thing, funny how Tyrrell was always good in Sweden. It didn't matter what it was. Yeah, it's
just,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, they had something right or wrong the other time. Yeah.
Okay. Sam Smith wants to know whether you think that next year will be Alonso's last chance at a title shot with Ferrari, because in 2014 we've got turbo engines coming, completely new, different rules. Do you think he's got a real crack at it? I mean, I suppose it's the Vettel thing again, isn't it, really, even next year?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it makes any difference if you've got a turbo or what's the name. You know, maybe some drivers will be a little bit more adaptive to that type of thing, but I don't see that making a big difference. Is he still enthusiastic? Is he still enjoying it and he's still putting it in? I mean, you could say Alonso's driving better than he this year, better than he has. I don't think that makes a difference.
I think I know how you're going to answer this one. It comes from Alessandro Forconi, and he says, how much luck is involved in winning a world championship? Or is it? It always is the very best man who wins.
So how did you think I was going to answer that?
Oh, I thought you'd probably answer it along the lines of course it's not luck.
Yeah, you're right, absolutely. Skill, good looks, all those sorts of things. I think I always said, you know, a driver can win a race, but to win a championship you need to have some brains behind it, unless the car is absolutely massively superior, because it takes a lot, much more than any other sport. Formula One has to have, you have to, the drivers have to be intelligent, because they're working with so many different technologies. If you think other sports have got very little technology, and when you want to win a championship, you've got to be consistently good under all of those different circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, points is what you need, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends. They've changed the point systems and stuff, but yeah, I knew in when I was going for the championship, yes, I had to score points, and that was what I wanted to do. Not that I could have won any more races if I tried harder, but you know.
Okay, what do you feel, Jody, about the huge moves we've seen recently to racing in the Middle East and the Far East, and all these Tilke circuits? You know, all these circuits are designed by one man. What's your feeling about that as you watch now?
Well, yeah, it's the way the world's going, isn't it? You know, the money's gone over there, and Europe's sort of falling behind very fast. So that's part of life. If I said anything else, it was much more fun in those days, type of thing, you know. And I think for the drivers, it's probably the same fun as it was for us, except it's just a different era, and we older, we look at it differently. But no, I think it's the way it's going. We got accepted.
But the huge, you were extremely vocal and worked hard at safety during your Formula One career, and of course, one that has been perhaps the biggest leap forward, hasn't it? Not just in the cars, but in the circuits and in the whole environment.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I think a lot of things contribute. The carbon chassis is probably one of the bigger ones because it just stays together when the cars. But yeah, a lot. The guardrails are out of the way. They used to just chop a car in half when they went in the middle of it. Yeah, no, from that side, and you see the drivers doing what they did today, bumping quite often. You know, if you did that very much, I mean, I think it was Arnoux and Vils did that, and that in those days was complete madness because you just touch it, you don't get out of that very often. Yeah.
I'm going to ask this one, not because I want to reply to it, but because I like it. It comes from an Italian called Riccardo Toccato, and he says, would you agree that Vettel is only world champion because he's lucky? Well, I think we'll leave it there, but anyway. I do that. Well, no, you've got to love the Italians. I mean, hey, yeah. It's Ferrari all the way. Well,
he rode his luck, didn't he? I mean, there's no getting around it. That last race, it really should have been all over at the first
turn.
I
think
four.
Whatever else, I think in Brazil he was extraordinary.
He was.
Because, the incident when they had to come in together with Senna, when he was pointing backwards and everybody sort of coming at it, A, they all missed him. B, the car was somehow just able to continue, and Adrian said it was very, very marginal. But most of all, I mean, I still wonder why there was no investigation into the coming together in the first place.
Well, quite, because actually it did appear that Senna had the corner.
And this is something actually that unsettles me a bit, that at some races the stewards seem to investigate every tiny little thing, and others, depending on who the stewards are, you just think, oh, well, it's just gone by.
Yeah. I know we're almost out of time, but I mean, just one point on this the steward side of things. I'm interested, Jody, what you think. Do you think that the way that the penalties are introduced now and the way that it's policed, it's gone too far, or are you comfortable with it the way it is?
Well, they haven't invited me to do it. well, let's put it this way. It's a lot better than when Max Mosley was there. A lot, lot better. Yes, for me, you get fined for every little thing you do. Thank goodness I'm not there for that reason, because I'd probably would do one or two races.
What do you think, Jody, will happen with Kobayashi for next season? I know we have touched on this, but... do you think that he will? I know we all want him to, but do you think that he will get a drive, or is it just become so competitive now?
No, I can't believe that with being Japanese, they don't come up with something that gets him in there, because he's the first driver that I remember that really is possibly in the middle to the top drivers. Now, I'd be very surprised if somebody or something in Japan doesn't come together.
You might, well, this comes from David Joe, and it begins, Jody is my all-time favourite driver. Is he a friend of yours?
He's now, he is.
and he's always wanted to ask you, what was Patrick Depailler like as a teammate?
Yeah, he was a really nice guy, Patrick, yeah. He had a couple of girlfriends in every town. No, it wasn't as bad as that. No, he was a really nice guy. I don't know how you explain it. I mean, remember the first race I went with him, he was having a little glass of wine before the practice, and that didn't seem right. But he was arrested going into one of the races because he was overtaking all the cars. He was a bit like that, but a really nice guy. Yeah.
He was unbelievably brave, wasn't he? I mean, one of those you sort of too brave. Because he used to tell me up, and he used to go up into the mountains above Clermont on his bike, whatever, Kawasaki or whatever, just wearing a pair of shorts.
Yeah, but he broke a leg or something.
Yeah, he did. In fact, just before his first drive for Ken. But he said, I must say, I did find it a bit disturbing that he got a great buzz out of riding the hell out of this bike, only wearing shorts and knowing that if it did come off, it was going to be awful. James always thought he had a death wish.
Don't know about that, but no. Always the little funny thing is that when I got there, and you know, this is your first sort of serious season, and you get these fast corners, and you can't take it flat, and you just and I said, Patrick, what are you doing? It's quite flat. Quite flat. Jesus! And the next time I'm going, I'm holding it down. My leg wants to pull it up and get and touch the grass and everything. Halfway through the season, I realised he said, "No, it's not quite flat." That's what he meant.
So. Oh boy, I like that one. Good value you are, Jody. I got to say. We know you'd like to do a bit of Friday morning driving next season, and Nigel Newman says, which team would you want to drive for next year? Had you got the opportunity?
Me?
You.
Wow. That's McLaren, Red Bull or Ferrari probably. Not fussy. Mind you, the food's better in Italy, so probably I'll take that, yeah.
Good answer. Okay, this comes from somebody called F1 in Pubs. I guess that's not actually his name, is it? How do farm animals compare with the thrill of racing in Grand Prix racing?
You know, I suppose you get into something, and the more you learn about it, the more interesting it gets. And, you know, I must say that my company in America that I started on the kitchen table, and you went, that was, you know, massively hard work, but very exciting, you know, when you got a contract and things like that. The big difference is only you knew and your shareholders. In Formula One, everybody knows. That's the bigger difference. But I enjoyed my Formula One. I enjoyed my span in America, which was very successful. But it was very, very hard. And this one is very, very hard. And I don't think I'm really successful yet, although we do some fantastic product.
You do. In fact, I was going to say, as we're just a few days away from Christmas, I guess you're rather keen to get out of here and get back to work, because it must be your biggest time of the year, I'm sure.
Yeah, by far. Most food people. I can't understand it, because why do people eat so much more in that area? I mean, nearly double or treble in that era. But yes, it's a big time for us, yeah.
Here, one last question. I guess this is for all of us. It comes from Paul Corley. Could Vettel win without Adrian Newey? Let's start with you, Jody. Silence.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got to have the car to win. You can't win without a car, without the right car. So he's got the right car. But, you know, whatever you say, he's still, you know, one of the best driver or the best driver there.
But this Newey thing is a factor, though, isn't it? Because if you look at who's designed the cars that have won the championships over recent years.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think Adrian is worth more than any driver.
Are you sure about that?
You've got Adrian. You've got a guarantee, haven't you? You're going to win races, whatever the team, whatever the drivers, to a degree.
Were you paid more than Derek Gardner?
Yeah, but I'm not sure I was paid more than Newey. No, that's right.
Ed, what do you think? Can this young man win lots of Grand Prix without Adrian Newey?
Of course he can. You know, we've seen lots of cars win races this year, and they haven't got Adrian Newey designing their cars. And Vettel, as we, I think, all agreed on, he's one of the best guys in Formula 1 and one of the best guys in Formula 1 for years. So, you know, put him in McLaren, he'd win races. Ferrari, he'd win races. You know, an HRT, he wouldn't. He's not that good. But, you know, well, no one will next year, because I don't think they'll be around. But, yeah, of course he can. You know, he's brilliant.
I'd agree with that. I think Vettel's top notch, but what I would say about him is he's clearly flawed, as they all are in their own different ways, but Vettel's got weaknesses. He's easily rattled, he still makes mistakes, and the benefit he's got with Newey's cars is that usually he gets to get out front and dominate from the front, which is the way he likes to do it, and he's definitely got that advantage. But if he was in a McLaren, he would challenge for titles. If he was in a Ferrari, he'd challenge for titles. But he is a worthy three-time world champion.
Yeah, he is. He is. But I still, you know, I've all my life I've believed you learn more about a racing driver when he's up against it, when he's, you know, when he's not in the best car, and it's how he responds to that. Does he sort of semi give up, or does he still on it every weekend?
I always thought that was very true for a team as well.
Yeah.
When they're winning and everything, that's all right. But when it really gets down, you see how they react. It's, you know.
Okay, well, it's been fascinating. I've enjoyed it. I hope you all have, whether you've uploaded or tuned in or whatever we do these days, download it, one of the two. I'm a bit confused about the two, but anyway. It's Christmas time coming up, so we're all going to be taking a bit of a holiday, as I'm sure will all of you. But we'll be back, of course, in 2013 for more Motorsport Magazine, more motor racing, and let's hope another absolutely fantastic season. Thank you very much, Jody, for taking the time to come in today.
It's a pleasure. You didn't mention that we've got turkeys for sale.
No, I didn't. Do you know what, Jody?
At Leverstoke.
You know what, Jody?
Park Farm.
I didn't. But so they haven't walked out yet in protest.
No, I'm going down there to feed them just straight after this.
And Rob, I should just say before we close, you'll be reading more from Jody in the February issue of the magazine, because one of the reasons why he's in today to do this podcast is because he's guest editor for the February issue, which is on sale around this time. So there's lots more from Jody about his cars. He's got an amazing collection of his Formula One cars and Formula 2, Formula 5000, Formula Fords, and mozzarella as well. So there's a bit of everything in the February issue, so don't miss it.
If I come and buy a turkey from Laverstoke Farm, can I have a look at your cars?
No, not one turkey. I have to buy a lot more than that.
One turkey, one car? Actually, I've always been advised never try and do a deal with Jody Scheckter, and I ain't starting now. So have a great holiday, everybody, and thank you to Alan Hyde for looking after us on the microphones throughout the year. We'll see you back at Motorsport Magazine in about a month's time. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.